With this edition of In the Author's Voice, I'm Jeff Williams. Friday, May 22nd is World Eosinophilic Esophagitis Day. More commonly known as EOE, it is one of the fastest growing digestive diseases in the U.S. Dr. Evan Dellen is the director of the University of North Carolina Center for Esophageal Diseases and Swallowing. I recently talked with him about EOE.
So yeah, eosinophilic esophagitis, we abbreviate it EOE. It's a lifelong or a chronic allergic condition of the esophagus. And I often explain to patients they could think about this almost as like asthma of the esophagus or eczema of the esophagus. And what happens is allergy cells, including the eosinophil cell, which is a type of a white blood cell, build up abnormally in the esophagus. And this causes a lot of irritation, inflammation, swelling, and ultimately can cause scar tissue in the esophagus, and that makes swallowing difficult or painful, and it does disrupt daily life in many cases. And EOE is now one of the fastest growing digestive diseases, so it's becoming much more common. You know, 2 decades ago we thought it was really rare. Now it's about 1 in 700 people in the U.S., and so probably more than 500,000 people nationwide are affected.
Wow. Do we know, is this something that is a genetic abnormality, or are there environmental conditions that trigger this?
Yeah, with the disease increasing so rapidly like it is, it's primarily environmental causes that we think are at work here. Now, there can be some genetic predispositions. There are families where this tracks. But to see, you know, something increase, you know, 15, 20 times in how common it is over the last 20 or 30 years, it's going to be environmental changes, because our genetics don't change that quickly.
Have we studied this long enough to know or to understand what maybe triggers this? Or are we still trying to figure that out?
Well, I think overall we don't have the trigger, but probably there's not a single thing in the environment that triggers it. There have been obviously a lot of environmental changes over the last 50 years, and so we think it's probably some combination of changes in the foods themselves, changes in how foods are grown and produced, maybe the packaging of foods, and then, of course, other environmental factors, you know, chemicals and other sorts of contaminants that may play a role as well. And what happens is those factors may interact with the esophagus lining. And if someone has a reason that their esophagus lining is a little bit leaky, that's when that allergic reaction can happen in the esophagus and can trigger the entire condition.
You mentioned that this often gets misdiagnosed, or it may take a while to get a correct diagnosis. What are some of the common symptoms that we would see with individuals that are afflicted with this?
Yeah, sure. So there's sort of two parts to that. I mean, one is it can be take a while to get diagnosed because it can masquerade as other conditions that are more common, like reflux. And many patients will say, oh, I've got some symptoms, it must be reflux, and kind of leave it at that. Additionally, sometimes people will have trouble swallowing, but they'll kind of just write it off. Oh, I took too big of a bite of something. I wasn't paying attention. That food was overcooked. And so they may actually subconsciously kind of adapt how they're eating and avoid things that stick, or be really careful or take a lot of time with eating. And that minimizes their symptoms, and they may not realize that it's a problem to report. And so for those reasons, yeah, it's like 4 to 6 years potentially of symptoms on average before people will get diagnosed. So that's, you know, obviously a problem we want to try to address by encouraging people to know about the symptoms and get in a little bit earlier.
Sure. Is this a case where an individual may actually see the symptoms worsen over time, or is it kind of is each case different with the individual?
Yeah, in general, symptoms can worsen over time. And so, you know, in teenagers and adults, the main symptom we're talking about is going to be trouble swallowing. And so what people perceive is food sticking or hanging up, maybe a choking sensation, or food going down slowly. And sometimes when it does that, it will cause pain. And people may have that for a while, but then they may get worse and have what's called a food impaction, where food gets stuck so badly in the esophagus that you can't really get it up and it won't pass. And that requires going to the emergency room and getting an emergency procedure to try to get that blockage fixed. And so I think for me, it's pretty common that if I'm talking to people, they have that progression where symptoms are not so bad initially, and they ignore them. And then over time, they may end up with this kind of impaction. On the flip side, though, with kids, the symptoms really are a much wider range. You could have abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, trouble with eating and feeding difficulties, growth troubles, even, you know, sort of extremely picky eating. And in those situations, there's still a delay in the diagnosis. But there, you know, it's reliant on the parents to try to figure out, well, really, what's out of the ordinary. And ultimately, it has to be a pediatric GI specialist that can sort through all those symptoms for a given child.
So is there, or I guess I should say, or ask, what is, once it is diagnosed, is there a prescribed treatment or set of treatments that can help alleviate these symptoms?
There are, and that's one of the reasons that we aim to try to get this diagnosed earlier now, because there are treatments that can help improve the symptoms and decrease the chance of complications. And, you know, people have a lot of anxiety and distress related to these symptoms because there's so much related to food and eating. And there's, you know, that's such an integral part of a lot of interactions. And so people get really worried, you know, am I going to have symptoms at a work event or this social function or even at school? And so we talk to people about treatments. There are medicines that can help decrease or eliminate all of that allergic inflammation in the esophagus. And in a lot of people, we think EoE may be triggered by a food allergy kind of reaction. And some people opt to try to just figure out which foods may cause EoE in a given person and eliminate those. And so we talk about the, you know, the pluses and minuses of those treatments and come to a plan with each patient.
It sounds like once it's diagnosed that this can be a manageable disease.
Absolutely. It doesn't go away. You know, people don't grow out of it. It is a chronic lifelong condition. But the large majority of people now, we have very good treatments that will help them, you know, decrease their symptoms and manage it.
For folks that hear this, maybe for the very first time, where's a good place they can go to get more information on EoE?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing is if you are hearing this and recognize some of these symptoms, you know, go to your provider and tell them about it and say, you know, could it be EoE? And they'll do the investigation. You can get more information as well at the American Gastroenterological Association website, where there's actually an online tool that you can do. It'll give you the chance that you might have EoE in your own personal circumstance. And then you can also check out resources from APFED, which is the American Partnership for Eosinophilic Disorders. And they have really a terrific set of resources. And you could check that out at apfed.org, which is APFED.org/EoE Day.
That's Dr. Evan Dellen, director of the UNC Center for Esophageal Diseases and Swallowing. With this edition of In the Author's Voice, I'm Jeff Williams.